Hi, and welcome to the Materials Today podcast. I'm your host, Stuart Bland, publisher of Materials Today. Thanks for joining us again. This week, Laurie Winkler spoke to Professor David Simpson from the University of Melbourne. Professor Simpson will be giving the Materials Today Materials in Society lecture, entitled Diamond Quantum Probes for Biosensing and Imaging at the 29th International Conference on Diamond and Carbon Materials this September.
Welcome to the Materials Today podcast. Could you please introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your current role?
Hi, my name is David Simpson. I'm a lecturer in physical biosciences at the University of Melbourne, and I'm currently working in the Quantum Science and Technology Group.
Great. And what's your background? I mean, I can tell by the accent that you're an Aussie, but what brought you to Melbourne?
So I did my PhD in applied physics at Victoria University, which is not too far away from the University of Melbourne. And then I came to the university and have been here for the past 10 years looking to develop new technology around diamond-based quantum sensing, and have really enjoyed the ride.
Yeah, so that's actually something I'm really keen to learn more about. So this is a high-resolution magnetic resonance spectroscopy technique, and it's based around these defect centers in diamonds. It just sounds fascinating. So could you tell us a bit more about how that works?
Sure. So diamond is not really thought of it as a sensing material, but we're very interested in the defect centers in diamond, and it's the defects that really make that material, from our point of view, an outstanding material for quantum sensing in particular. And it turns out that there are particular defects in diamond which act like ideal quantum systems. And so they're basically these tiny atomic scale defects, and we can use a combination of light and microwaves to probe the energy levels and use this system as a unique quantum sensor.
And what could this be used for? Like, I'm guessing this is something that's going to be related to MRI, so that we use for in hospitals for patient diagnosis. So what kind of an impact could these sensors have on that area?
Sure. So to give you a bit more of a background on the actual sensor itself, so if you grab a diamond and you remove two carbon atoms from that diamond and you replace one of the carbon atoms with a nitrogen atom, and you leave the other site vacant, that creates what's called a nitrogen vacancy defect, or it's called an NV defect. And this NV defect has some remarkable properties. So if you shine green light on this defect, you can actually polarize the spin associated with that defect, the electronic spin associated with that defect. And it turns out that that's really hard to do in a solid state system. So that's a really unique thing to diamond in particular. And using that ability to polarize this electronic spin, we can then use that spin to start interacting with the environment around it. So we can use that spin to ask questions about, can we detect things that are inside the diamond? And what we're more interested in is detecting things that are outside the diamond. And these things are usually magnetic, but they can also be things such as temperature, electric fields, and strain. So it's a very useful and small sensor in that regard.
And I guess then, given that it can sense lots of those things, it could have really, really wide implications.
Yeah, absolutely. So the really nice thing about this sensor is that we can actually engineer it very, very close to the surface of the diamond. So these days we can precisely make these NV centers a few nanometers from the surface of the diamond, which means we get incredibly close to the targets that we're interested in. And so you mentioned before about the MRI and ESR applications. This means that we can now start to get our detector very, very close to these targets. So our sensitivity is very much improved compared to a traditional MRI, and resolution is now down at the nanometer scale. And so we're really looking to target sort of intracellular processes, and individual biomolecules is the goal.
Wow, that is amazing. That's a paradigm shift in these kind of techniques.
Yeah, it will be. And it's a challenging goal, so it's by no means solved. But we've ticked a few of the hurdles along the way in terms of being able to detect electron spins, being able to detect nuclear spins, and to be interacting with these spins to polarize them, for example.
Okay. So then you also just mentioned there ESR techniques. This is electron spin resonance techniques. And correct me if I'm wrong, but can they also, as well as kind of imaging molecules, can they also tell you something about the biochemistry of those ions?
Yeah, absolutely. And chemists have been using ESR for a very long time, and chemists and biology predominantly use ESR a lot. And they use it to determine chemical reactions. And this has been a very effective tool and has served science well. But one of the limitations has been the sensitivity of this technique and the lack of imaging capability. So usually ESR is done by putting your chemical of interest or chemical reaction in some kind of cuvette, and then you are basically looking for a sensor readout. What you'd like to be able to do is image where these specific biochemical reactions are going on and do spectroscopy in real time, but actually add an imaging capability. And that's the thing that we're trying to do with this this diamond imaging technology.
Wow, that's super cool. Really, really cool. So I'm guessing now you're at this stage, you've kind of made some serious progress down this path. Are you starting to look towards, you know, doing IP on these? Are you looking at commercializing these technologies? How does it work at this stage?
Yeah, so we have we've covered a couple of different ideas around this quantum sensing technique in terms of IP. And commercializing quantum technology isn't as easy as you think. So normally systems operate at very cold temperatures and in very restrictive environments. But luckily for us, diamond works at room temperature. So it's actually a very good prospect for commercialization. And we've had some experience with that in the past. So we've been able to commercialize the world's first single photon source. And we did that back in 2009. And that was, again, based on diamond technology. But at that time, quantum technology there wasn't really a market for quantum technology. So over the past decade, that's really changed a lot. And now there are big multinationals that are investing in this area, particularly around quantum computing and quantum information. And we think that quantum sensing is going to be a big part of that as well. And so we're working with CSL, which is one of Australia's largest biotechnology companies, to advance many of these quantum sensing ideas, yeah.
Okay, so just to go back, because you mentioned there that the these diamonds operate at room temperature, does the implication from that mean that you could potentially get higher sensitivity, whether it be ESR or MRI systems, higher sensitivity at higher temperatures?
Yes, absolutely, and that's one of the big goals. So for ESR, it's not as simple. So when you do ESR, a lot of the spectroscopy you want to do needs to be done cold because the lines are very broad for electron spins. But for nuclear spins, these lines are incredibly narrow at room temperature, and you can do a lot in terms of chemical sensing and MRI, for example. So one of the hopes is that we can use this technology to start to polarize molecules, which we can then inject into the body and improve traditional MRI scans.
Yeah, remarkable. I know that you got a lot of media pickup when there were some announcements around this, but how do you kind of manage this point in the research where you are working with collaborators, you are looking at, you know, producing it as a kind of commercial technology? How does that work within the kind of the human side of this? So how far down the path do we need to go until it starts to be tested within commercial MRI, traditional MRI systems?
So we're working on that at the moment, and we're hoping to secure funding so that we can externally validate these NMR techniques. But it's an incredibly fun time at the moment, because we're sort of on the verge of many new discoveries, and we're working with a variety of different fields and basically exploring where this technology can go. So it's an exciting time. I don't think it'll be commercialized in the next 2 to 5 years, but I think that we'll get a much better understanding about where we can actually use this technology and the kinds of questions it can answer over that time frame.
Yeah. And are you collaborating kind of across industry and academia and potentially, you know, health boards and stuff like that? Are you looking at collaborating with the whole space?
Yes. Yeah. So at the moment, we've got projects in chemistry, pharmacology, science, and engineering. So, and all of these areas are particularly interested in trying out this quantum sensing technique. It's a very new technique. And in terms of biology, we're asking questions that biologists don't traditionally know the answer to. So we're both kind of exploring that space together, which is a really nice place to be.
And this is a question that I wasn't planning to ask, but I wonder if given that I'm in New Zealand, you're in Australia, since I've been here, I seem to have discovered and come across some just remarkable research that's being done in this part of the world. I just wondered if you've ever felt that the distance from kind of European or American research centres has made your job any harder, or has it made any difference at all?
I think it makes a little bit of a difference. So there is... when I've spent significant periods of time overseas in Europe, for example, it's much easier for researchers there to meet more regularly. But we really try to make a concerted effort to go to conferences and make sure we're up to date with the latest that's going on with our field. And we have several great collaborators internationally that we meet with regularly. So we try and keep that barrier to a minimum. But it is a little bit harder being from Australia, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Although I guess it's not so difficult to attract people over to Melbourne in the summer.
No, exactly right. And one thing about the University of Melbourne is that we really have world-class leading researchers in a range of these different disciplines that I spoke about earlier. So it's not too hard to find a world expert in the particular area that you're interested in. So from that point of view, it's a great environment to work. But the summer is also good.
Yeah. So then what's next? What's next for you, David? What's next for your group? And what kind of unanswered questions, shall we say, will you be focusing on for the next few years?
So the next few years, I think we're going to, well, my interest in particular is looking at iron in biology and looking at the role iron is playing in many biological systems. And so iron is magnetic, so it represents a really good target for the technology that we've developed. And we've established some key collaborations with David Casalis at the University of California in Riverside and David Keyes, who's in Vienna. And what we're doing with these guys is basically looking at how iron is mineralized in biological systems and the role that it plays. And so to give you two examples of the projects that we're looking at the moment, the first is looking at a sea mollusk, which is referred to as chitin. So these guys sit on rocks and they eat the rock to extract algae from the rock. And to do that, they need these incredibly hard teeth and they make their teeth out of iron. And so there's this, they've got a beautiful conveyor belt of teeth and they wear through their teeth maybe one a day by chewing at this rock. And it turns out that the magnetite that the teeth are made out of is the hardest biomineral that people have identified. At the moment, chemists don't know how this animal is able to actually mineralize iron in this specific form. And so our technique offers the ability to image iron in different phases. And so we want to be doing that throughout development and then seeing how this system is able to do that and then hopefully be able to reverse engineer that system and create new kinds of advanced functional materials based on the design of biology.
Wow, interesting. And I recently interviewed someone who's looking at how creatures in this kind of same environment produce incredibly sticky surfaces. So it looks like, yet again, nature is giving us lots of inspiration for future materials.
Absolutely. And it's remarkable to see how these systems are able to produce such complex designs simply at room temperature and you know, sitting in the sea environment. So that these guys just get iron from the water around it and assemble it in this exquisite fashion. So that's one of the, really exciting projects that we've got coming up. The other one is looking at the inner ears of pigeons. And so we're working with David Keyes, who's interested in the origins of magnetoreception. And so there are currently two main hypotheses as to how birds navigate via the Earth's magnetic field. So one is that there's a radical pair that's produced in the retina of the birds, and the other one is that the birds have this some sort of magnetic particles which act like compass needles. And so David has identified certain areas within the pigeon's ear that have got these magnetic particles. And at the moment, there's no technique that's sensitive enough to be able to image the magnetic properties of these particles whilst in the tissue. And this is something that we're working with David on closely to see whether we can determine how magnetic these particles are and whether they're candidates for magnetic reception or not.
Very, very cool. Oh, I'm not sure how you're going to answer my next question now, because that's so interesting. But the question which you always finish these interviews with is, in your opinion, excluding your own area, of course, what are the other hot topics in material science?
So I guess the hot topics for me, it's kind of in my area, but I think magnetic materials in general very hot right now. So there's a range of different applications, from MRI to drug delivery to data storage, that's all being underpinned by various properties to do with magnetism. And so understanding how magnetism works and how we can control it at the nanoscale is leading now to a whole range of new applications in these different areas. So I think magnetic materials is certainly a hot topic. And I'd like to think that quantum biology, in the sense that we're doing quantum biology in terms of quantum sensing, but also quantum biology in general, I think is another exciting area to watch. And I think we have a lot to learn from biology.
That's awesome. David, thank you so much for your time. It was a great pleasure to hear about your work, and best of luck in your upcoming talk at Materials in Society talk that's coming up in September in Croatia.
No worries, and thanks very much for the opportunity.
That was Laurie Winkler speaking to Professor David Simpson from the University of Melbourne. Professor Simpson will be giving the Materials Today, Materials in Society lecture entitled Diamond Quantum Probes for Biosensing and Imaging at the 29th International Conference on Diamond and Carbon Materials this September. We hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. If you'd like to send us any questions, comments or suggestions, then you can do so by emailing us at materialstoday@elsevier.com. To stay up to date with the latest developments in material science and technology, you can sign up for our email alerts, follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/elsevier.materials, or catch us on Twitter at Materials Today. If you're listening through iTunes, please don't forget to rate the podcast to help others find us here. And remember to visit materialstoday.com for the latest material science and technology news, webinars, jobs, blogs, and even more podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.